What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to a well-awaited episode of the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. It's Teeing It Up with C and V. I'm your host, Connor. As always, with the V of the logo himself, Vladdy. Welcome back to our side of the pond. Welcome back to the pod.
It seems like I always plan my trip to Europe. It's kind of a yearly thing at this point at a poor time. I think the last 2 years I've been gone during the Final Four, or at least during part of the tournament, so we have to miss an episode. So I apologize to the listeners, but I'm doing very, very well. We had an incredible trip. Not going to give too much details here because I could probably give an hour on that by myself. It'll just be for whenever I see people and kind of catch up in person. But great trip, had some fun. Real Madrid sucks, and it's kind of entertaining because we're getting closer and closer to the end of a wasted season, one of the worst seasons I've ever witnessed, and it means the coach gets fired. So that's good for us. But other than that, I guess I'd say I had a pretty funny kind of just work realization slash hangover Monday morning. I walk in the office and I'm staring at my kind of computer and I'm like, damn, 36 hours ago I was loving life, killing time, have it on vacation, and now I'm sitting here putting some work in for the shareholders. So, that's me. How are you?
I'm good. That Monday is kind of when you go somewhere or do something, anything exciting in general, let alone a week-long trip to Europe, is just one of the worst feelings, whether you're actually like hungover from alcohol or not. I know you don't get that, but yeah, I'm good. This is my last week as a student. Well, I guess I have finals, but last week of classes as a student, and I'm very happy to finally be saying that. It's long awaited. It's been a throwaway semester in my mind, so to speak, as far as my efforts towards school. But that's it. I'm excited to talk about sports today. We've got a lot of topics, mostly centered around basketball. We missed a week, so we're going to go over some, just dip our toes a little bit in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. And talk about the Final Four and the national championship last night. Then we will talk about some the biggest story in baseball, arguably, to start the season, and the Torpedo Bats, and then end off on Masters Week. That's what really this week is in the sports world. One of my favorite weeks, kind of the start of spring, the start of golf season, just a good representation week. So we'll finish up with that. But I guess we can kind of get right into it with the basketball. Do you want to start with the week that we missed? Really, the only note I really wanted to talk about was kind of the ending to MSU season. I mean, there's some other notes in there that what happened. Some relatively good games in there and some really not so good games in there as well, as far as that last weekend. But where'd you want to start with for the end of the NCAA tournament that we
I
have?
figured we could just do Michigan State's two games, and then maybe that leads us into Michigan State's very early off-season roster movement, and then maybe if there's other
Yeah.
things for that Sweet 16 Elite Eight weekend. If not, we'll go straight into Final Four. So Michigan State Ole Miss. Thankfully, Delta is not very good at getting people from point A to point B, so I was actually able to watch all of this game on the ground with my phone, as opposed to having to try and get creative in the air with some kind of live streams or some kind of stupid kind of stream quality Wi-Fi. So I was very glad for that. Michigan State kind of kept up their tradition of this year's tournament of starting slow, starting slow, starting slow, and in the second half, kind of a Cohen Carr breakaway dunk after I think it was Fierce who kind of intercepted a pass from Padula. Kind of woke up the Spartan basketball team and the Spartan players as a whole, and they were able to kind of finally take the lead after trailing for probably the first 30 minutes of the game, and then just kind of held off Ole Miss.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of to add now that I've kind of like forgotten this game mentally or chosen to forget this season. It was just kind of another, like you mentioned, another like very typical Michigan State win and what this team was able to do all year. I knew Ole Miss was going to be a big, tough opponent. You had Padula and guys shooting relatively well for Ole Miss. And then in the second half, they kind of clamped them down and did their thing where down the stretch, like kind of we've mentioned all season, MSU teams that have kind of faded in those kind of down the stretch in second halves. This team did what they did all year and did not do that, and made it hard to score, and were able to get kind of baskets when they needed to. Jace Richardson had a really nice night after kind of a couple of so-so performances the first weekend. But yeah, it was a good win. It was the closest spread of any Sweet 16 game at 2.5, and they what a cover by Ole Miss. Sorry, 3.5 it got to with the buzzer beater throwaway three. I was happy. I bet Ole Miss plus 3.5. I got the best of both worlds in a Ole Miss cover and a Michigan State win. And then on to Saturday after Auburn beat Michigan. Michigan actually, I thought, gave Auburn, I mean, I guess they lost in the Final Four, so it can't be its best game, but gave it them its best game of the tournament. For a lot of that game, it was close. They pulled away in the last 5 or 6 minutes, but Michigan for the first half looked like the much better team. Just wanted to make note of that. Not a Michigan fan, but was impressed by that performance. And they actually, I thought, looked a lot better against Auburn than we did. I think the score was 70-64 in the end. It was a 6-point game. Does that sound about right?
For Auburn, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that game kind of lived in the 8-12 range for the majority of consistent minutes. And they were just kind of, I hate the age excuse because, like, whatever, there's all those teams that in the Final Four besides Duke were living in that 21-24 range and all five of their starters. I think I saw their starting lineup was like senior, sixth year, fifth year, something like that. Jahni Broome was the youngest player in the starting five, and he was 21. He kind of a weird game where, like, you knew MSU, and this was what I was like. I mean, I hate saying like this is stereotypical MSU, but this is what we said and worried about this team all year, is that when you played a better opponent or a team that could kind of go and get baskets on will at, on you because they have bigger, stronger athletes. This team wasn't never a good enough shooting team and needed a perfect shooting performance to stay in a game like this. And they just didn't get it. I mean, most of this game was that I think it was 16-0 run, 17-0 run very early in this game. I think about halfway through the first half, they were up by a two or three and went out. Auburn went on a 16-0 run. They were never really able to truly recover because you're never really able to go on runs the way this team played all season. And that's kind of how this one ended up. It was relatively back and forth from there, but it didn't matter because it was never truly a competitive game without ever truly being a blowout. Although the score says it was relatively close in the end, I just thought this MSU team did what they kind of talent-wise were capped at. And that's okay. And we're going to get into that whether that is actually okay moving forward with Michigan State and Izzo. But yeah, those were my kind of my closing thoughts on the Auburn game.
I love the way you ended it where they hit their ceiling. And I don't mean just by a seed standpoint because, oh, yeah, the 2 seed is supposed to go to the Elite Eight based on numbers and logic, but that's not always how it goes with how some of these team season goes. And if you have bad stretches, if not, and that maybe knocks you down a peg. But this team, as you mentioned, the talent at the top end, the way the roster was constructed, was never going to be able to compete with the best of the best. They were never going to be able to win multiple games in a row against the best teams in the country, even if they had beaten Auburn. Because, like, if you play Auburn 10 times, maybe you win one of them, but then you have Florida looking at you. And if you play Florida 10 times, you're probably not winning any. Maybe you win one. And it's like those two things happening back to back. This Michigan State team, there was no shooting, there was no talent, there was no size, there was no NBA athleticism. It was just a good group of guys who bought into Tom Izzo, busted their ass, and got as far as they could with the tools at their disposal. And maybe, I don't know if this is the show where we do the whole debate on if that's enough or if that's considered a success. I think right off the bat, it was a successful season. You put a banner up, first time in 5 years you've done that. That's good. Albeit in a weak conference, and but at the same time, you were never in contention for a national championship. So again, I don't want to go into that conversation here because I don't think this is the time for it. But the game itself, You're right. After that 17-0 run, kudos to Michigan State for bringing it back to a respectable level. And like you say, back and forth is great, but back and forth, if you're already down by six, just means you keep it down by six. You never got back to the mountain. You were always fighting downhill or uphill, I guess, is maybe the from our perspective, the better way of saying it. So, good enough, I guess, if we want to go into the roster construction, or maybe destruction is a better word so far, because on April Fool's Day, Trey Holloman shocks us all, where he was, I mean, he was Mr. Spartan. Like he's fighting guys on the logo. He's talking all his shit to everybody every time they play a game. He's defending kind of the honor and the tradition. And then, oh yeah, he's in the portal. And it's like, what? And then more stories come out, and it's like, this was apparently known 2 months ago. He was shopping for deals during the season. We've said this in the football. That's ridiculous. That is tampering. The season's still going on. But because the NCAA doesn't need guardrails, there's nothing that can be done about it. So that was a shock. Xavier Booker's in the portal. He's since committed to UCLA. That's not a shock. I think he only played like 3 minutes in the tournament. That was against Bryant once it was already over. You said it perfectly in the lead up to March Madness. You were like, this is the odd man out. This is probably an 8 to 9 man rotation. He's number 10. He's not going to see the court.
And it got down to eight at times. I think Zapala didn't, because Ole Miss liked to play small. Zapala didn't play at all in that Ole Miss game.
Yeah, then there's I mean,
Norman.
yeah, Garrick Norman, which whatever, like, that's not really a contributing piece. I guess not that Xavier Booker was ever really a contributing piece of a Michigan State basketball team, but at least he was hyped and could have been a contributing piece.
Yeah,
So
there is. It's crazy. There's still that fantasy in the back of my head where I was like, dang, like. I was sad to see a guy who I ripped on and never really thought was actually good go, But, and I think that's a horrible, like, Nick Cronin. I know he's getting, I saw $1.3 million to go there. Crazy. And I've seen Holloman's being offered as much as 2 million. Who knows how much of that is actually true? I've seen Arizona State, North Carolina, and North Carolina State are the three that he's been looking at the most. And I know he had been shopping offers, and I was still really shocked. Like you said, he kissed the logo as a junior, which is,
maybe
I
that was
mean,
the telling point, to be honest.
yeah,
Maybe
maybe.
Izzo knew, and it was just like, you know what? Thank you for
But if
the.
I'm Izzo, like, are you really just going to throw your hands up in the air and that's your dying effort to this
Oh
guy?
no,
Like,
I'm with you. Like, I don't think, but I'm just trying to rationalize how he let a junior kiss the logo.
a junior, a captain, like a guy who, he was bawling his eyes out. Now I look at that when they finally lost to Auburn. Now I look at that as like he's just sad to move on. Clearly, a guy. To me, it's not so much anything against Michigan State. It's that he wants to play or sees himself as a certain position, and Izzo must have said that that is not how I see you fitting into our program. But a guy who averaged nearly 10 points a game would have been probably would have been definitely a starter on this team coming back, would have played big minutes, would have been another captain this year or next year. I was shocked with it personally.
I mean, I was, like I said, everyone thought it was an April Fool's joke. You send it into group chats with friends, and it's like, ha ha, April Fool's. And it's like, well, this ain't a joke, man. Like, he's in the portal, and doesn't sound like it's one of those, oh, he's like, he might come back. It's he has his eyes set on X amount of destinations, and now it's a bidding war for him. So that
And
was
one
just,
more name we didn't mention
well, that's the
is
biggest name.
Richardson.
Yeah. That I was gonna say, that's the biggest name. So I wanted to talk about the little guys, then we could get into Jace.
That's probably the biggest one is Jace Richardson today declaring for the NBA draft. I've seen him as high as the eighth overall pick in some mocks. Most of them have him in like the 10 to 15 range, 10 to 17 range. So it makes sense. Like, I don't blame him at all. He is a guy that came in and he was a very high recruit, but a guy who wasn't an immediate starter. I think it took until the new year for him to actually crack the starting lineup. And then came in and was one of the best freshmen we've ever seen at Michigan State, especially down the last 2 months of the season. I think he averaged over 15 points a game. I don't have much to say. I thought maybe there was a chance you would come back and maybe pull. I always pulled a Jaden Ivey comparison, a guy who was a late first round pick projection. Obviously, Jaden is a little higher than that, and came back and said, "Hey, I want to be a top five selection." That's what he did. It's easy to do that when you're going to back to like the best school in the country with Zach Edey, where who knows who's going to be on this Michigan State roster come this time next year, or 6 months from now even. But yeah, that's kind of it was kind of the nail in the coffin for me, because you look at a team that you thought you were going to have three, four, five starters coming back, or guys that played big minutes in your starting lineup next year, between, Carr, the three guards with Fears, Holloman, and Richardson, and then you can mix in, the two big guys left, and you're like, well, this team isn't going to take any steps back. If anything, they're going to take steps forward, because a lot of those guys are still young. Carr, Fears, freshmen, sophomores, obviously, Kohler and Cooper would be seniors on that team, so we'd still have some veterans. And now half of that is gone, and you're left with a point guard who can't shoot, a small forward who can't shoot, and role-playing big men is what I'll call them.
Yeah, disastrous first couple weeks of the offseason for Tom Izzo and the program. I guess it is what it is. I think I'm the same sentiment as you. Like, you're never gonna blame a kid or never gonna try and be mad at a kid who's projected in the lottery. Because like I love the Jaden Ivey comparison, but it's not even the best comparison. Like you said, Ivey was one of those guys where it's like maybe you'll get first round money, maybe you'll get a 2x2 contract, but maybe you won't. Whereas Richardson is projected lottery guy, and we'll see what happens. And it just sets up Michigan State for a very big question mark of next season, a very big offseason that's expected. And the problem is the Tom Izzo is not known to attack in the portal. He'll add through the portal, but he'll add role players. He won't add starters and stars, for lack of a better term. At least he hasn't so far, and so we'll see what we do. But yeah, that we might have a very interesting MSU podcast season recap slash future preview later on in the May June days when sports are kind of donezo. But do we get to the Final Four?
Yeah, a Final Four that featured all the chalk that everyone had talked about. We had kind of mentioned we saw it, and it made for an eventful Saturday. I actually thought both were very good games. Obviously, we'll get into the second game and was, but to start with the first game, Auburn, Florida takes down Auburn. Back and forth game. I actually was like the much more entertaining game of the two. I kind of zoned out for portions of that Duke Houston game and was able to zone back in when it actually mattered in the last 37 seconds. But Auburn, Florida had its offensive moments. Juni Broome, you could tell, was still dealing with, I think it was an elbow, it was some kind of arm injury. I think it was an elbow injury from the Michigan State game, was not at 100%, and it was kind of the Walter Clayton show. He goes for, I believe, 35 points in that game, and I kind of saw Florida winning this game. They seem to have the best game plan for Auburn in the regular season, and it just kind of came to fruition. It was back and forth the whole game. Auburn led for a good chunk of it. Florida came all the way back, and then it was just more back and forth, and Florida hit more shots when it mattered most late in the second half.
I can't add much because I actually didn't watch the two Final Four games, so I'll let you go off on the second one as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, didn't have the crazy good ending that you wanted, but was an entertaining back and forth basketball game. That's how I would categorize that. And I think the better team did actually win, obviously, since they won a national championship. The second game, where people and Duke haters who had been kind of hiding in the bushes all season got their glory moment. Duke leading the entire game. For double digits for a large portion of that second half, chokes in the last 37 seconds. It starts with the inbound, then it comes to the Cooper flag foul or phantom foul, I'll call it. I didn't think it was a very good call on him at the free throw line for over the back. And then Houston, like oddly, like it was one of the weirdest 37 seconds down six comebacks ever, because they didn't really hit a huge shot there. They just kind of got to the line a couple of times and made clinching free throws. They made the game tying free throw to go up one. And then with, I believe it was maybe 3 or 4 seconds left, LJ Cryer hits two to go up, four out late in that game. And then they don't even get a shot up to end the game. I mean, weird game. How do you Knipple? I can't even say it. Knipple, and Cooper Flagg, all the stars kind of came out, and Cooper Flagg's college legacy is going to be that he is not a gamer, or is not clutch, has no clutch gene. I think it's the highlights that I saw, it's three of their four losses this season. He had the ball in his hands, with a chance to take the lead or tie the game. And he, I believe it was the Kansas game or the Kentucky game early in November, he airballed a shot. And then he fell in their Clemson loss in January, with the game on the line. And then this one had a chance, one-on-one matchup, and just barely even hit the front rim. So that's kind of his legacy, and that will go down. They showed Coach K way too much. That was my other random thought that had nothing to do with the actual game. And I think in my head, I was like, do you think Coach K actually, the egotistical maniac he is, he's probably happy that they
I
lost.
wouldn't go that far. I think it's one of those where it's like he's there
It
to
took him
cheer
10
up.
years, and his replacement can't be winning a national championship 3 years in.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, and like the little rat-faced dickhead that we all had to deal with for so long. But I think part of the reason he walked away is because he was done with the sport. I don't think he's gonna turn around and become old man who yells at clouds. And it's like, I don't want my former protege who won a title with me to not break my own record. I don't think that's the case. I know what you're saying. I don't
I
know.
don't know.
I absolutely agree with you. I didn't need to see a stupid face on or I'm sure people didn't need to see a stupid face on TV.
Yes.
But I the only thing I'll add is kind of with the ending of that game. I think you mentioned it, but if you make one field goal in the last 10 minutes and 30 seconds, that was Duke, by the way. There's not a lot you can really complain about with when you talk about that kind of phantom or ticky-tack call on Flag. Because I agree, that was super niche, if at all. There probably wasn't much, but maybe you should make more than one field goal in 10 minutes and 30 seconds. So that was unfortunate. And the other thing was kind of with the age and preparation was John Shire. Oh Lord, do you not practice inbound plays in
Yeah.
your in like well, that was some of the worst just lines of trying to get the ball in I've ever seen. But you know,
I
it's a
would
team.
almost go as far as, like, how do you call a Final Four season a failure? But this team is going to go down as one of the most talented teams
Oh,
of
yeah.
our generation. And to not even make the championship game, I think, is a failure and goes against John Shire early on in his Duke legacy. I hate calling it that, but
I would
that's
agree.
all.
You have a borderline generational draft pick in Cooper Flagg. I say borderline because I think he's one step below that kind of Wemby range. You
Agreed.
have two other lottery picks. You have great role players. You spent millions of dollars on this roster, and you, like you say, you end up falling short. So that was that. I agree. That was probably viewed as a failure for Duke. Anything else there before we get to the national title?
Now let's get into the title game.
I'll quickly start. Last year for me it was DJ Burns. This year I fell in love with this Houston team. And it wasn't just the fact that I had a good amount of money riding on this with brackets. Like I did fall in love with the way the Houston team defended, the hustle, the help, hands everywhere, offensive rebounds, just swatting everything back to their guards, the tenacity. It was so impressive to see. And then when you hear some of the kind of practice or off-court stories, all of it makes sense. I don't know if you saw some of those video clips that were surfacing of their practices where all they do is just beat the shit out of
Tackle.
each other in loose ball drills. The other thing that I don't know if you saw this, and this once again is part of why I think so much works for this Houston team, the way they play, and kind of what adds to the impressive for me is that Houston team, the average mile time for the entire team is 5 minutes and 17 seconds. And the slowest guy on the team, who was like 6'9", 240, was 5 minutes and 46 seconds. That is a team that is conditioned. I remember in one of, I think it was maybe it was the first round or one of the first weekend games for Houston or the second weekend games where I was actually able to watch. And they basically said that Calvin Sampson, when he's recruiting a player, says, "Your toughest high school practices won't even compare to the easiest ones you'll have for me." And the ones who are okay with that are like, "I want to play for you." And he built an incredible program. With that said, as we get to the game, they had Clayton and that Florida team in hell in that first
Yeah.
half. And their Florida is very, very lucky that Mr. Richard caught fire and kept them in the game. That and a brutal missed goaltend, which changed kind of the ending that first
Yeah.
half. Instead of 33-25, you're looking at 31-28 with that quick 5-point spread or 5-point kind of swap.
It wasn't even like he caught fire. It was like they'd have a good set and they'd just kind of they'd forget he was there and he'd throw the ball over the defender to him and he'd have an easy layup. That happened at least three or four times in the first half.
I guess quick sidebar before we get to the second half. How does college basketball seemingly review every single play? Everything's a hook and hold, everything's a flagrant review, everything's a clock review, and then you don't look at that goaltend.
That was my like when I was watching with my roommates. It well, I, they were like, oh, can they review that? And I said, yeah, they can. And I was apparently very wrong.
So I think what the way I understood it, and as obviously it goes on, I think they need to call it to be able to review it
Okay.
because that becomes a dead ball. But then my problem goes, if you can only review it in a certain scenario, why do you not make that your de facto kind of like go-to anytime it's
Right.
even remotely close? Even
Like
if
the
it's
NFL
remotely.
with fumbles.
Yeah. So I didn't I really hated that. As we went into the second half, I thought, unfortunately, the refs made it a whistle show and threw a
Yeah.
bunch of the players in foul trouble. Where I saw in the first half, there were four fouls called on both teams combined. In the first 10 minutes of the second half alone, there were 18 fouls called. And it's like, come on, guys, let's tone it down a little bit. There was a little bit of, I thought there
Two
were some,
techs.
I was going to say the ticky-tack technicals. I didn't see a technical on the Florida bench when they were complaining about a call.
Yeah.
And the one guy is, I think it was Chimmy Lou, or I forget his name, but when he jams the ball into the ground, I don't think that's a tech either.
So I was told that I was told by somebody that it's automatically one if it goes above your head and does not get caught.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's then we got to look at the rule book. Then that's not a ref show. That's just that's a broken rule. It's like, let the boys, like, he's not
I agree.
throwing
In a
it in.
national championship, especially that first one, like a bunch of assistant coaches chirping at you gets you a technical. I agree. I always let the boys play, especially at that moment.
But in the second half, Florida was able to kind of bring down that Houston lead, which at one point became 12, one of the biggest comebacks in national championship history. And I think I'll give credit to Florida's defense because for so much talking about Houston's defense and what they did to Clayton and everyone else, as soon as Houston got into foul trouble and maybe lost a little bit of their rhythm with their big guys and had to go small ball, they had no idea what they were doing. The only time they scored points was if Cryer played some hero ball or they got to the free throw line with their early bonuses and got to shoot some foul shots. That was an incredible defensive performance. It carried all the way through to the end of the game. We'll talk about those last couple possessions where Emmanuel Sharpe, oh dear Lord, brother, what did you do? And not just on the last one, the second to last one was just as bad, dribbling into a triple team with no idea
Yeah,
what his
I
end
forgot
goal
about
was.
that
Because
actually.
like there, it's one thing to dribble around; it's another thing to have a purpose of where you want to go, how you want to get there, how you're going to beat your man there. And he had none of that, and then it ends up getting swatted off his own leg.
So
So.
my thought was like, especially with that one, obviously the one that ended the game was just botched in all sense of the imagination. But the that one That's kind of that one's on Kelvin Sampson a little bit to me too. Is that's what you really
Yeah, oh,
had?
absolutely.
Or it was Tom Izzo-esque.
For a guy who drew up so many great plays, you look at the Purdue game, you look at some of the other ones where some out of inbounds plays, they're drawing up guys into the corner for beautiful threes. What Calvin Sampson was able to come up with in those last couple possessions, it was really sad. I also thought Calvin Sampson grossly mismanaged his timeout situation, and I understand it was the player who called the second
The
one
one where he's falling out,
with
yeah.
15 minutes left. Didn't love that from the player, just throw it off a dude's leg. But Calvin Sampson used his last time out before Florida shot their second free throw, I think it was. And it's like, why would you not let them take it? Whatever happens, happens. You grab your rebound. They're not pressing you. They're not. It, especially if you, especially if you don't use your timeout, because it's in the middle of the moment. They're not going to go put guys on the line. Run down the floor. Take your time out quickly, and you have 15 seconds to draw up whatever you want. That last play, they took way too long to get the ball up. I don't love going for three when you can go to the basket and get fouled. But at the same time, maybe the argument is Tugler had already fouled out. Francis was sitting on four. So maybe
Yeah.
they thought, you know what, we don't have time to go play 5 more minutes against this deeper, more momentum having Florida team. But in that case, Emmanuel Sharpe, what are you doing? Like, this is the part that like frustrates me is multiple times throughout that tournament, I watched him pump fake, take a dribble, and pull up a shot. And on this one, he went up with about 4 seconds left, and obviously he saw he was going to get blocked. He saw
Yeah.
it was Clayton was well at Clayton was that was insane defense. He jumped before Sharpe did. It was that
Yeah.
was super cool. But yikes.
And a credit to you mentioned Clayton. Like, for a guy, their best player all season was averaging over 20 points in the tournament to not have that game. I think he had 12 points down the stretch, but didn't have a point till like 10 minutes left in the game. I to be able to play that kind of defense and contribute after not contributing at all, pretty much for the first 30 minutes of that game, in that moment as the star player, that's how you win those types of
Oh, yeah.
games.
And I mean, they did call Clayton their closer. They showed that little stat of all his little final points in the last 4 or 5 minutes of each game and how
Yeah.
he just showed up when it mattered most. You know, it was awesome for Florida. They were the best team in America alongside Duke down the stretch, including conference
Yeah.
tournament into the actual tournament. They came from behind, and I'm pretty sure the Sweet 16 on in every single game from who they play in the Sweet 16? Why am I drawing a blank?
They
It
play
wasn't.
UConn in the Elite Eight.
No. Oh yeah. All the way from UConn. They came from behind against UConn. Then it was I can't believe I'm drawing a blank here. But because it was Texas Tech who was up by a ton in the Elite Eight.
Want to
Auburn was
say it
like
was a Big Ten team.
I can't believe I'm whatever. But kudos to that Florida team. They persevered. Anything for you before I tell you my anti-Tom Izzo story that I came up with last night when I was sitting in bed distraught over my money loss?
No, this is just like a this is unfortunately like a really good team that was dominant all year that came out of nowhere. They were not ranked in the preseason in a very good conference that were doubted for the first half of the season that, like you said, was the best team down the stretch with Duke and had a superstar player that I think will be one of the more forgettable, like, dominant champions. I think this team's like you'll go down, you'll go, oh yeah, Florida won it that year. Like I hate to be like say that, but that was just my opinion when I woke up. I was just like, yeah, that Florida team was really good, but they won it last night. And I just this maybe this is just the pessimist in me. I just thought, and maybe this go gets down into your Tom Izzo stat, but I was like Todd Golden's second year head coach. It ain't always brighter when you win one that early. The pressure gets on later when you can't do it again.
Well, what I was going to say is, I think maybe who they played, Houston is not a big time brand. Houston is not Kentucky. It's not Duke. I think that maybe lives up part is becomes part of what the game is, how it's remembered, and obviously how the champion kind of comes down to it.
Yeah, well, it's like the I would say this was more memorable than 2 years, the first year of UConn. If UConn didn't go back to back, no one would remember that first
I
year.
agree,
So
just with how bad that Final Four was. I agree.
yeah.
But all right, it's time for you to hear my anti-Tom Izzo propaganda that I came up with, just because I actually think there is some validity to this, and it goes against what a lot of the some Spartan fans just refuse to accept. So here we go. Story time. In the year 2000, Tom Izzo won a national championship against Billy Donovan in the Florida Gators.
Oh
And then Billy Donovan and the Florida Gators went and won two of their own. And then Billy Donovan bolted for the NBA. He left them. And then they were bad and they weren't great and they got a couple of coaches. And you know what happened then? They found a guy who could win a third title, all while Tom Izzo sits on one. And if you talk to some people around the state of Michigan, to be fair, I understand it's kind of hard to blur the line when all you've ever known is Tom Izzo for people our age.
Yeah.
You talk to some people and it's like, well, this guy won a title. There should be a statute of limitations on winning a title. Tom's statute of limitations is up. This idea that only he is allowed to win, or only he is, I don't know if legally is the right word, of like, or just some kind of practically able to win at Michigan State, I refuse to believe that's the truth. And even if it means you have to go through some bad years, go find a guy who's willing to adapt to the modern game, play the transfer portal, find NBA wings, find NBA athleticism, and run a more modern offense. That is my anti-Tom Izzo propaganda. He beat Florida for his one title, and since then, Florida's got three with different coaches, and he's sitting on one, and people are like, well, you know, he did something before I was sentient or before some of us were even alive. So that means we have to stick with him forever. It's like, all right.
Yeah. I agree and disagree with some of that. I'm not going to go down that total path you went on, and that's an excuse for letting him go now, especially after the season they just had. But I do agree that the bar should be like just lowered for how he's viewed in general.
Yep. Yeah, again, I didn't mean to say this in like a he should be fired standpoint. I just meant it from the perspective of it's okay to move on from a coach because other coaches can also bring their own thoughts to a program. They can bring their own take to a program and you can win with different things. That's kind of where I was going to go with it.
Yeah, but so you're saying tomorrow they should hire a new guy because of that?
No, I'm saying
Okay.
that I think the people who just blindly scream, oh, Tom Izzo won the title. He can do it again. It's like, that was 25 years ago. Nobody listening to this podcast was sentient. Some of the people listening probably weren't even alive. Things change, and if your coach doesn't change with the times, you're out. I don't want you there. Same situation as you've heard me kind of rant with Real Madrid the last couple weeks. The coach doesn't want to adapt. The coach can't put things together. I don't care if you won two titles in the last 3 years for us. Get out.
Yeah.
So, is what it
I'd
is.
like to see how this current portal plays out before I have too strong
Sure.
of an opinion on his
Sure.
approach at this point. After you asked me this question last year, I would have been probably willing to go down your path a little more. But I just saw it work and it'd be relatively successful relative to the expectation I hold them to, and not what a ton of like people in this area do, is that I don't hold them in that goated, untouchable Coach K, Roy Williams, B Bill Self, John Wooden, Bob Knight category that p other people put them in.
I can respect that. But yeah, that was my anti-propaganda. Do we get to the torpedo bats?
Yeah, I
This will
guess
be
the
quick.
biggest,
It'll
yeah, it'll be quick. The biggest story in baseball this year, besides the fact that the Yankees are now 6-5 and just got pumped by the Tigers two nights in a row. Ooh, the Tigers, 5 wins in a row, 7-4 after an 0-3 start. We'll take that. But it's ironic we're talking about the fact that they just got shut out and had three hits today. But The torpedo bat is taking the world by storm. A Yankees front office person, we talked about his resume before we hopped on, former MIT engineer, has a path in many different avenues, not in baseball, has a mid-career switch to play baseball, not play, but join baseball and develops these bats that we're seeing where it is as simple, from what I've heard, is just putting more wood on the sweet spot of the bat without actually changing the weight or distribution of how the bat feels. So.
I guess my thought, I looked at it from a couple ways. I enjoyed the fact that there's a little bit of engineering in the sport. I kind of look at it from an F1 standpoint where it's like you have regulations, and as long as you stay within the regulations, who cares what you do? So for the I don't know if I've seen many people saying it should be outlawed. Maybe it's because it's the Yankees that you do have people complaining about it, but I like the fact that there is some ingenuity to a sport that seems so archaic at times. I also thought it was very interesting how it took them 150, 200 years to come up with the very revolutionary concept that if you put more bat on the part of the bat that hits the ball, the bat goes farther. And it's as simple as looking over to a semi-similar sport in golf. The bigger clubs tend to go make the ball go farther.
Right.
So it's
Yeah.
interesting how it took them that long to even come up with this kind of concept. I thought that was funny. So
And now we'll wait to see every other team design their own version of it here in the next, I don't know,
5 weeks.
month, rest of the season. But yeah, that's your baseball talk. We'll get into kind
Tigers
of, I guess,
later.
Tigers preview. Off to a pretty good start, 5 in a row. Thanks for coming. Like I said, speaking of golf and golf clubs, the Masters is this week. The biggest spectacle in the sport, kind of the kickoff of the season for a lot of people. I know there's a couple of decently big events like the Players, the waste
PGC,
management that happened
yep.
before. What?
Sawgrass as well. Or
So,
actually, that
yeah,
is the Players. Yeah,
Players.
I was
Yeah.
thinking of Bay Hill. I thought that's what you said.
Yeah. That too. But Augusta, is it the only Masters, only Masters, the only major that plays at the same course every year? And we talked a bit going on, but it's a field that's relatively wide open. The world number one, Scottie Scheffler, has been pedestrian for his standard. I know it's kind of it's tough to say that when the guy I think has 5 top 10s already this year, which is more than anybody else, not named Rory McIlroy. But no wins this time last year. He had 2 or 3
I thought it
already.
was three because I know he had won the Players. I'm pretty sure he had won at Bay Hill, and I think he won one of the Texas
Arnold
tournaments as
Palmer.
well.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of it stemming from really that the cutting injury that he cut himself. Was it making ravioli or something like
Yeah.
that? And he actually said that. I was reading something today because I hadn't read too much up on the injury or how actually, I don't want to say mediocre because he's still playing the best of anybody on the planet right now, not named Rory McIlroy, as I'll say. That he said it was actually affecting like his balance and his grip and his swing a lot so far this year. And he had to kind of go through some swing adjustments. And now it's almost like he does have a, I mean, it's so minuscule on their scale, but a bit of a different swing now with the cut and how it's had to recover and heal, which is so interesting for just like a pedestrian injury like that,
Yep.
that like any one of us could do any day of the week. But that opens up the field for everybody else. And what the second betting favorite is Rory McIlroy, who has actually played like the best player in the world to date. He has wins at the Players. And I think he has one other win this year to go along with 3 or 4 top 5 finishes already. He hits the ball well. We're now in year 11 on him trying to get the Grand Slam. He hasn't, yeah, he's 35 years old. He hasn't won a major since the ripe age of 24. And he's had his moments. The storyline is there. Everybody knows it. It's can you trust him? For the last 2 years specifically, he's had just moment after moment of just literal self implosions that can be blamed by nobody but himself. And he even made a weird comment before the Valero last weekend, that he's been nursing an elbow injury and it had a lot of eyebrows. Is it a real injury? Is he kind of trying to, dimmer some expectations, which a guy of his stature, I don't know if you can actually do, but just raise some eyebrows for his sake in that he is apparently going through an injury. And then the other next betting favorite is Ludvig Åberg, who made his Masters debut last year. Obviously, the highest finish of anyone in their first ever start in the Masters, came onto the scene a year and a half ago at the Ryder Cup and has been every bit as good as advertised so far on the tour, having a very good season as well. I question a little bit with him whether the hype is too much. He's obviously the most talented player in the world. He's 25 years old. He's good looking cat. Seems like he's got everything going for him. I just wonder, and I actually kind of doubt him as far as the betting favorite or being one of the betting favorites this week. But some other guys you're thinking of, or some other notes, that's just kind of rattling off on the betting favorites to start.
No, I think, like you said, Scotty dealing with an injury and not being red hot as he was last year, which honestly forced us to talk golf even before the Masters. You don't know where the live guys are because you only see them 4 to 5 times a year, so you don't know what stature they're going to be in, and it does make for a wide open field. I like the Åberg pick, and it's not exactly a dark horse as he's kind of established himself as a top 5 to 10 player in the world consistently after kind of showing up at the Ryder Cup a year and a half ago. But it's tough to make predictions because obviously, like you say, Rory is the hottest player in the world. And then there is, like you say, he starts throwing around, whether it be actual injuries, which will injuries affect your play, or if it's just premature excuses, so he can kind of try and save himself from the banter of, oh, look, Rory didn't win another major. It's now 45 in a row as opposed to 44. But if we're gonna do the whole prediction thing, give me Oberg just because why not? But I can't predict this because I haven't seen any of these golfers play.
Yeah, just I'll throw out some names that are playing good golf right now, this season. The first is Colin Morikawa. He is second in top fives only to Rory McIlroy this year. Doesn't have a win yet. Finished second 2 years ago at the Masters. Finished fourth last year. He's kind of always in the hunt. People forget he won two majors at an even younger age than Åberg did. He's only like 2 or 3 years older than Åberg, anyways. I think he's going to be in the mix as well. The other one that has kind of fallen off the face of the planet as far as where his top of his game has been is Justin Thomas. Seems to be back this year. Has been playing some really good golf. Has a win this year. A number of top tens. He hasn't really competed for much since he won that PGA now almost 3 years ago now, when he beat Zalatoris in the playoff, he hasn't really even competed for anything Masters wise. He's having a great year though. A lot of people are very high on him. And then live guys, guy, I think, I don't really have any anecdotes on stuff I've read for it, but I think
Joaquin
me
Niemann.
personally, knowing the guy is Jon Rahm. Look for him to be back in the mix. Just a guy who is talent-wise a top 3 or 4 player in the world. Went over to live for the bag, thinking he'd be on the PGA Tour playing in those events to come this time right now. It hasn't worked out that way. He's voiced his frustration. So has guys like Brooks Koepka, who's kind of said, once my contract's up, I'm going back to the PGA if they'll have me. Jon Rahm, after last year having to defend his jacket he won 2 years ago, was awful. It was the only cut he made in any of the four majors last year. He withdrew from the US Open with a foot injury that he seemed to nurse all year. He's been back playing well in live events. Look for him to do well. The other live name I really like is Joaquin Niemann. It's another guy that he first competed in the Masters at 19 years old. He's 26 now. He was kind of deemed an up and comer and kind of moved to the live before he could ever really do that. has not really performed well in majors in his young career, and that's kind of been the knock on him. He has 2 wins on the LIV so far in this young season, so I like him a lot as well. Just kind of some guys I'm going to throw out there for dark horses.
Yeah, I like that. I think the I don't have more to add just because I haven't watched any of these most of these guys play, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know. But the one thing I will say that I am glad that we don't have to talk about on this podcast and amongst our friends is no Tiger Woods. Thank God, because
Yeah.
I keep doing the oh well, you know, at Augusta anything can and he can make a cut and then he goes out and shoots an 80 in the in round three and withdraws. And then proceeds to
Yeah.
miss all the other cuts. So I'm glad that there is no none of that. And like amongst your friend groups, it's like, oh, Tiger with a bogey. It's like, oh, cool. Like I'm a little over that. So I'm glad
Yeah.
you're not gonna have to do it. It's unfortunate that it's because he tore his Achilles. I wish it was because he was in the news again and was cheating on his wife and he was on suspension or something. But you
Well,
know,
now he's with Donald Trump Jr.'s ex-wife.
yeah, Jesus. But yeah, so I'm just glad we're not gonna have to do that. I'll stick with my Oberg pick for you.
A pick. I'm gonna go the Masters. I feel like, and maybe it's because I've got it went Scotty, Rom, Scotty, but I feel like the Masters is relatively a chalk pick. Like Scotty, Rom, Scotty, Matsuyama. Which even that you could call a not chalk. He was a top 15 player in the world that year. DJ, Tiger, Patrick Reed. I mean, these are all guys that were top 15 players in the sport when they played. So of any of the majors, I feel like the Masters is usually the chalk the most. And that's because
They know the
those
course.
guys, those best players, have played it more times than not. And they know their way around the course. It's 7,700 yards this year, which
Do
is
they
the
even have enough
longest since
room
ever.
on the property to do that?
There, well, they buy new property every year to expand it. Like it, that's just insane to me. That's absurd length.
Jesus, man.
But my pick is going to be Colin Morikawa.
I like it. Going outside the box, unlike Mr. Chalk here, Ludvig Åberg. I don't have much more to add.
No.
I'm kind of chasing a farewell drinks for some friends. That's kind of why I asked to start this a little earlier today. And so, if there's nothing else you want to bring up, if we can wrap it up, and then I think it's good to be back after the missed week. I think we'll probably do a little bit of NFL draft stuff before the playoffs start and as we get closer to the draft in the next 2 weeks. But I guess any last words?
No, farewell, I guess, to the podcast, people listening. Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.